This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhibi in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The need for accurate, credible information is even more important precisely because it's now even more easy to literally make anything up and make that look incredibly convincing.
That's William Byrd, Director of Media Monitoring Africa, on new challenges facing journalists. Details coming up. Also, Sudan's warring factions reportedly agree to 7-day ceasefire starting Thursday. And authorities in Cameroon say Anglophone rebels have attacked military posts, killing at least 6 people. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Seeking to quiet the guns in the capital Khartoum long enough to make progress on a peace deal, Sudan's warring military factions agreed in principle today to a 7-day ceasefire starting Thursday, South Sudan announced. Previous truces have fallen apart amid rocket and rifle fire, raising questions whether a week-long ceasefire will last and provide the time and momentum for peace. For peace talks that two sides have agreed to, possibly in Saudi Arabia. A statement released by the Foreign Ministry of South Sudan, which also offered to mediate in the conflict, said its president, Salva Kiir, stressed the importance of a longer truce and of naming envoys to the peace talks. The conflict risks developing into a broader disaster as Sudan's impoverished neighbors deal with a refugee crunch and fighting hampers aid deliveries in a nation where two-thirds of the people already rely on some outside assistance. United Nations officials today said they're rushing to get aid to civilians caught in Sudan's brutal war, now in its third week, and said the conflict is creating a massive humanitarian crisis. Despite the announced extension of a ceasefire on Sunday, there are reports of gunfire and explosions across the capital Khartoum today. The battle pits Sudan's army under General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan against the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces led by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. They had controlled the military-led government for 2 years but fell out last month in talks to create a civilian-led administration. In Geneva today, the spokesperson for the UN High Commission for Refugees, Olga Sarado, said several agencies are preparing for a massive flow of refugees.
So over 100,000 refugees are estimated to be among those who have now crossed to neighboring countries, including Sudanese refugees, South Sudanese returning, and other nationalities who were themselves refugees in Sudan. Alongside governments and partners, UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, has determined an initial planning figure of more than 800,000 refugees and returnees that may flee Sudan to neighboring countries.
Many Sudanese have fled into Chad, Egypt, and South Sudan. Thousands have managed to join foreign nationals on evacuation ships or flights. Paul Dillon is the spokesperson for the International Organization for Migration.
At least 334,000 people have been internally displaced within Sudan as a result of the fighting since the 15th of April, according to IOM's Displacement Tracking Matrix Network report, which was released last night and has been disseminated to media here in Geneva. The number of displaced people through the last 2 weeks exceeds, as a result of conflict, exceeds all conflict-related displacements reported in Sudan in 2022, just to give you a sense of the scale of movement since April 15.
Tariq Yaserevich, the World Health Organization spokesperson, said the WHO is rushing to get medical aid to Sudan.
We have 6 containers of supplies for the treatment of injuries and the treatment of severe acute malnutrition that were dispatched by sea and are currently being moved to warehouses in Port Sudan. We have another 30 metric tons of emergency supplies to be flown from our logistic hub in Dubai as soon as this becomes possible.
Yaserevich also said the WHO has assessed the potential harm for a medical laboratory that had been occupied by fighters in the conflict.
We did a risk assessment of the situation, and the risk has been seen as moderate. And this is because the lab cannot provide its main function, and that's to provide the analysis and the diagnostics because of the lack of fuel and lack of trained staff. What we should really keep in mind that really the biggest health risk for Sudanese people right now is the conflict itself, where health workers and patients cannot access health facilities. Those health facilities are not available. So really the lack of access to health services, this is the main risk.
The aid agencies warned they already are facing a funding shortfall, which has been worsened this year by extreme drought in much of eastern Africa, as well as the conflict in Ukraine. It's World Press Freedom Day tomorrow, and rights groups say scores of African journalists continue to be jailed, even killed in pursuit of the truth. They say media freedom continues to decline across the continent, with the Horn of Africa and the central and northern regions a particular concern. Darren Taylor reports.
Reporters Without Borders says almost 600 journalists remain in prison, many in Africa. Egypt and Morocco often jail reporters without trial, as do Eritrea and Ethiopia. In January, radio presenter Martinez Zogo was killed in Cameroon, while the editor of the Chronicles newspaper, John Ntwali, was killed in Rwanda. Across the continent, journalists have gone missing while on assignment, including in Democratic Republic of Congo and Mali. Louis Mudge, Central Africa Director at Human Rights Watch, says long-time rulers feel especially threatened by young people demanding change.
And that is being manifested through a pressure on journalists. A lot of these rulers don't want to hear from journalists if the journalists are telling them things that they don't want to hear. If you talk about a president who's been in power since the 80s or 90s, and a journalist starts to sort of demonstrate why that might be going against the democratic principles laid out in the country's very own constitution, and highlighting that to the population, you can see how that journalist might get in a lot of trouble.
Even in southern Africa, where media rights are more respected than in other regions, there are problems. In Mozambique, Ebrahimo Mbaruko of Palma Community Radio has been missing for 2 years. In Zimbabwe, journalists are regularly detained and assaulted. There, New York Times correspondent Jeffrey Moyo remains in jail.
South Sudan, I can't imagine that you're going to have any level of media freedom. Burkina Faso, there you've got immediate clampdowns.
William Bird is director of Media Monitoring Africa. It analyzes the state of press freedom across the continent.
Head towards Ghana, and then you go towards Namibia, South Africa. There's relatively high levels of media freedom, and yet journalism itself seems to be under, you know, existential threat generally, where sustainability models are still being questioned. We're still seeing more journalists being lost to the sector than coming into the sector, and this at a time when the need for accurate, credible information is even more important, precisely because it's now even more easy to literally make anything up and make that look incredibly convincing.
Bird says repressive governments and other bad actors are making widespread use of social media to spread lies and distortions. When African journalists try to correct these, he says, they're vilified online and their loved ones sometimes get death threats. Bird says in the near future, opponents of truth will use artificial intelligence, AI, to make anyone say anything they want.
To counter that, you need time, energy, resources, and critically thinking, engaged, inquisitive people. And those people need to get paid as well. And yet, we don't seem to be finding too many models for that. So if you look then at the...
Bird says African governments dedicated to democracy must find the resources to protect journalists and to fund media projects. If they don't, he says, their democracies will collapse.
Precisely, because if you don't support and enable credible media and credible journalism to occur, who's going to believe what one government says, especially as it becomes easier and easier to make it look as though a president is saying X, Y, and Z? If you can make them say anything that you want them to say, how do you possibly learn to distinguish what's real and what isn't?
If African governments don't want to or cannot support good, honest journalism, says Bird, journalists will have to look to the United States and Europe to help them fight what he calls the plague of technologically driven lies spreading around the world. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
As we just reported, tomorrow marks the 30th anniversary of World Press Freedom Day. Many media analysts stress the need to further strengthen protections for freedom of expression to ensure the fulfillment of fundamental human rights. In many parts of Africa, however, despite the long-standing recognition from both legal and socio-political perspectives, freedom of expression remains threat. Armel Gilbert Bukainiza is a board member of the International Press Association of East Africa. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached him by phone to find out the role of the organization.
The International Press Association of East Africa represents now around 300 journalists across East Africa in different countries. Our main work now is to do advocacy for our colleagues in different countries. Like now, we have been advocating for Abdallah Mumin. He's the general secretary of the Syndicate of Journalists in Somalia. He has been facing so many threats, arrests, but now he's in Nairobi. And yeah, and we have been also advocating journalists in Burundi, in different countries. Of course, we support colleagues in terms of training, safety, or because the situation in East Africa and some countries like in Ethiopia, where the freedom space is very narrow. Like sometimes we train our colleagues to be how to be safe, and we publish sometimes freedom of speech and freedom of press in different countries of East Africa. That is one of our main work as the International Press Association of East Africa.
Yes, as you say, members are from different countries in the region, and these countries have different governance systems. How are the journalists coping in those areas, in those countries, as far as press freedom is concerned?
Hi, that is a very serious question and a very serious matter for our colleagues. For instance, in countries, let me say in a country like in Uganda, for example, international journalists, as we speak now, you to get an accreditation, you have to pay $1,000, for example. So those are some measures that the government takes to deny accreditations and visa, journalist visa for our colleagues. Like in Uganda, they ask for now $1,000 and a letter from Interpol, I think, to get a journalist visa. So you see, sometimes they just, you just give up. So those are one of the measures that some governments here take to discourage the work of journalists in the region. Like in Ethiopia, you have journalists who has been jailed, a lot of them. You see, in Somalia, as I was speaking, In Burundi now we have more than 100 journalists in exile till today who can't go back in their country. So the situation of journalists in the East Africa, in some part of East Africa, it's really critical. It's really, really critical. And as the International Press Association of East Africa always call government to allow journalists to do their work.
Now, as the world marks World Free Press Day, what's your message to the leadership in those countries?
The message is clear. We upon those authorities, those governments, to let journalists do their work properly, because journalism is not a crime. unfortunately, some leaders are still struggling to understand that journalism is not a crime. When journalists can do their work properly, even authorities, they are among beneficiaries of freedom of speech, of freedom of press. Our message is clear: let journalists do their work properly. And in the frame of World Press Freedom Day, the International Press Association of East Africa is organizing an event here in Nairobi, where we will be discussing about journalists in exile in this region of East Africa. So where we'll have colleagues, of course, partners of media, media representatives, diplomatic representations, where we will be discussing about this matter of journalists in exile, because it's a serious matter in this region. And
that was Armel Gilbert Bukainiza, a board member of the International Press Association of East Africa. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Nairobi, Kenya. You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Authorities in Cameroon say Anglophone rebels have attacked military posts near its port city of Douala, killing at least six people. The attack is the closest the separatist conflict has come to Douala since fighting broke out in 2017. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Officials in Cameroon say at least 15 heavily armed rebels attacked a military post Monday in Matoke, a farming village less than 40 kilometers west of Douala. Officials say the separatists killed at least six people and wounded many others without giving a figure. The government says it is yet to confirm the identities of victims, but rebels and villagers say they killed five troops and a civilian. Samuel Dieudonné Ivaha-Dibua is governor of Cameroon's littoral region, which includes Matoke and Douala. Speaking by a messaging app, Dubois says he visited the injured in a military hospital Monday night.
Les populations de la région du littoral.
He says both the military and civilians will not accept separatists extending attacks and disorder to Douala, which is an economic hub in Central Africa. Dubois says the military presence has been increased on the border between Cameroon's littoral region, where Douala is located, and the English-speaking southwest region, where the fighters came from. He says civilians have been mobilized to denounce suspected fighters in their towns and villages. It's the first time rebels have attacked so close to Douala, a seaport of about 4 million people that supplies 80% of imported goods for the landlocked Central African Republic and Chad. On several occasions, troops have reported suspected fighters in the city and made arrests. 42-year-old Francis Mba is a clearing agent at the Douala Seaport. Speaking to VOA by a messaging app, he says any attacks on the economic hub would impact all of Cameroon and Central Africa.
This attack close to the economic capital of Cameroon is a sign that the government still has a lot to do to reinforce security permanently. It's a bad signal, given that there are many citizens, Cameroonian citizens, living in the economic capital. This is a call for government to step in and say this crisis must be stopped.
Cameroon's English-speaking separatists have been fighting since 2017. 2019 to carve out an independent state from the French-speaking majority nation. The rebels have vowed to attack all military posts along the borders with Cameroon's French-speaking regions. The military says separatists have attacked their positions in the French-speaking West region at least 40 times since the conflict erupted. The International Crisis Group estimates the 6 years of fighting has killed about 6,000 people and displaced more than 500,000. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Ghana has been encouraging African Americans to move to the West African nation since 2019, urging them to connect with their African roots and to invest in the country. American Chaz Kaiser has built a support system helping fellow African Americans, especially women, settled in Ghana and to nurture their ideas for business. Sananu Tord reports from Accra, Ghana.
Chaz Kaiser first arrived in Ghana in 2016 while serving in the U.S. diplomatic corps. 3 years later, she relocated to the West African country with her then 4-year-old daughter.
I came because I realized just the enormous opportunity there is, especially for Black Americans, in terms of entrepreneurship and building businesses in Ghana, and because I just thought it would be an awesome place for my daughter to grow up.
Kaiser was joined by her family in 2020 and launched businesses soon after. She has seen an influx of African Americans moving to Ghana and wants it to continue.
So there's so many women, especially so many Black women, who want to visit Ghana. But the first question they have is it safe? Yes, it's safe. So I wanted to provide a safe and soft landing pad for Black women wanting to experience Ghana and wanting to network and meet new people. And I wanted to make it as easy as possible.
Kaiser's social enterprise, Serenity House Ghana, provides accommodation, counseling, and workspaces for solo women travelers looking for spaces to rest, work, and learn. A patron of the facility is wellness practitioner Simone Hardy from Chicago. She is looking to relocate to Ghana in June to launch her online business. She says she wanted to get away from America's gun violence.
There's mass shootings. I know people personally who have been in mass shootings. You know, it's not a safe place. And especially for us as African Americans, we don't feel safe. So we are also searching for that void. And the peace, the serenity that you will find in Ghana, it's not something that you're going to experience in the U.S.
While official numbers have not been provided, diaspora groups say thousands of Americans have emigrated to the country in recent years. The Diaspora Affairs Office says newcomers have ventured into a wide range of business fields, including technology, real estate, transportation, and entertainment. The Ghanaian government says it is providing incentives for immigrants to live and invest in the West African country. Akwesi Ewa-Abibio is the director for Ghana's Diaspora Affairs.
Give them the same opportunities in terms of access to land, in terms of opportunities to do business, everything. Give them that citizenship. That will enable them to know that they are also Ghanaians.
In a region troubled by coups, Ghana has been an oasis of stability, holding elections every 4 years with smooth transfer of power. Ghana's government says it hopes an influx of African-American immigrants will boost the country's economic vitality.
The exposure that they have been given, their intelligence, their network back home to enable us to, you know, help out in our development. So that socioeconomic development and everything that we talk about is all embodied and encapsulated in this approach.
Kaiser says she hopes more Black women like herself will respond to Ghana's appeal. Sena Anutod for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyus Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.